Welcome back to another episode of the Main Quest Podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast that leaves to go get milk, but always comes back home. As always, I am your host, Keith. And as it turns out, fall is upon us. Jeff Keighley saw his shadow during Summer Games Fest. And so, you know, that means that the Main Quest Podcast is back fresh off of a summer break, which went a little longer than I expected. And that's something that I'll talk about in just a little bit, as it actually pertains to the first question that I'll be reading here, because this is yet another mailbag episode. I figured that this could very well be anyone's first episode, so I may as well kick things off in a way for you all to get to know me a little bit better. If you don't know enough, sometimes knowing me can ruin the entire show, so I don't know. We'll see what happens. But first, I have to give a shout out to my patrons. Now, of course, these are some of the best people out there, some of the best supporters. They are diehards, especially since they stayed with me throughout the hiatus. Not that I wasn't pumping out content over on the other feed, but, you know, everyone loves this main show. You know, the regular show is where some of the hottest takes are, and it was a weird time, admittedly, to launch a Patreon, knowing that I was going to dump this main show for a couple of months. But people joined, and they stayed, and hey, they reaped a ton of benefits. And so here are the people that are due a shout-out here. We've got David Palafox, Kayla Jackson, Eric Guess, Ashton, Chris Copleen, Zero Sam, and Van Fernal. And I don't know why it's Van Fernal is all one word. I always say Van Fernal. It's not two. It's Van Fernal. Van Fernal. Van. Van Fernal. He's going to be really pissed off. If you want to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/themainquest. And just take a look at all the tiers that are available. Like IGN, there is something there for everybody. If you want a shout out on the show specifically, you can slap a fiver down on tier 2, and you're going to get 2 bonus episodes. Sometimes 3, if I'm feeling a little frisky, along with other perks as well, those perky perks. And this month on the Patreon, I am talking about Alien Hominid, which is part of a brand new show called In the Flash, where I'm talking about early aughts Flash animation games, and what a surprise, they're all very bad. There's also a full-length episode on Hogwarts Legacy, which by the time this comes out has either dropped this week or is about to, and that is something that I recorded with the love of my life. Also, the first time I recorded with somebody in person, which is a podcast first. And then, of course, you get access to all the other bonus episodes from the previous month, which are nothing but classics from what I've heard. So consider checking out the Patreon. Again, it's patreon.com/themainquest, or just click on the little link in the show notes. Of course, first of all, I want to thank everybody who took their time to write in. I really appreciate it. And since, you know, I was just talking about the Patreon, let's start with the patron questions. And this is from Dave Jackson. He has 2 questions here. The first being, how was your Tech Bro Desert Meditation Retreat? What new spiritual connections have you formed? That isn't his second question. That's, I guess he has 3 questions. So I'm guessing this is in reference to the hiatus. At least that's how I'm choosing to interpret this question. But it was great. You know, when I take a break, I mean it. I take a break. The only podcast related things that I was doing was just making sure that those podcast of the year episodes and the Patreon episodes were being uploaded on time. And that's pretty much it. Like, my internet presence was zero, or at least pretty close to zero. Even just having a presence on the internet for the show for me is, it's miserable. I don't like it. I hate it. I've talked about on the show before how much I don't like social media. So I don't think I'm going to go any further than that. But most of the time during the break was just learning how to be a dad. Chances are I'm never going to figure that out. I wish I could objectively tell you how it's going. Probably not great, because they have no interest in playing video games. I think maybe they should probably not be that interested in video games at their age. But also, like, I don't know, man, what the fuck? Like, they much rather pretend to play Smash Brothers Ultimate than actually sit down and play it. And I have a theory why that is. It has something to do about temper tantrums, but who knows? I just don't, they have not unlocked self-consciousness yet. That skill tree is still grayed out. But yeah, they're hilarious, and I don't even think they know how much access to a wide library of video games that they have. It's kind of crazy, because if it was me when I was a child, I wouldn't even know what to do with myself. Maybe that's part of it. Who knows? And then something else I did while I was on break was take the time to polish off some books that I had been meaning to get to. I did a second pass through of Alex Aniel's Itchy Tasty, which is a pretty in-depth look at the Resident Evil franchise up until around Resident Evil 6. He does talk about Resident Evil 7 briefly, but not too much. I finished a book called Jacked, which is a look at Rockstar specifically and everything they did up to Grand Theft Auto 5. And having read that book, like, it is, I mean, not only was that place basically like a frat house, which is, anybody who knows Rockstar Games kind of knows that already, but just reading it is a little unsettling. But then also you look at how incredibly deep their library of games is up until they just became the Red Dead GTA machine. There's a lot of interesting stories on the development of those games and the stuff that was coming out of their studio, which some of those stories probably should have stayed buried. But hey, listen, it's Rockstar. They probably got an army of, I know they have an army of lawyers. They had to, right? So they're going to be fine. I also read Service Games, which, unlike Console Wars, is a very deep, factual deconstruction of Sega. Meanwhile, Console Wars is a horrible book. Like, the author has the biggest hard-on for Tom Kalinske and paints a portrait of him as if he was the second coming of Christ. Console Wars is more of a telling on Kalinske's takeover of Sega more than, you know, an unbiased look at the industry back then as a whole. And to the author's credit, you know, he did do a ton of research coming into the book, so I don't want to, like, downplay that part. But reading Console Wars, like, it seems like he took a ton of liberty writing with what he wrote in hopes that it would just become a movie, which it did. So, congrats to him, I guess. And the entire book reads like a movie script. So half the work was already done, obviously. So there's also no real mention of Michael Katz in the book, ironically, who was the president of Sega before Kalinske took over. Which, again, don't want to downplay achievements here, but Kalinske is a major reason why anybody bought anything from the early 80s to late 90s. The man was a marketing genius But a lot of those aspects of Sega were laid out by Michael Katz before he left, and Kalinske just basically carried them all out. Anyway, this isn't a Sega podcast. Console Wars sucks, but if you want some mindless entertainment, I guess there's worse books out there that you could read. And then the last one I got through was Jason Schreier's Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. It's a great book, one that shines a light on the modern gaming industry. Can't say I didn't learn anything new from it, but it was still a pretty interesting read nonetheless. So, all in all, you know, time well spent. Moving on to Dave's second question here. What did you think of Final Fantasy 16? I get it. Like, I get what you're asking, Dave. But I'm not sure you know that you're asking for a Final Fantasy 16 episode, which I don't plan on doing. I don't plan on doing it unless you go to patreon.com/themainquest and sign up on the $10 tier. Then and only will I do an episode on that game. It is a video game. Man, it sucks. I hated it. And not because I'm like one of those fucking virgin, it's not my Final Fantasy. Oh, all this action. It's not even turn-based. What are they doing? Oh, Square Enix. Oh, it's not because of that. Like, but just because it's just straight up not a good video game. It's probably the most unmemorable video game I've played in a while. And when I finished it, I couldn't delete it fast enough. I'm just going to leave it at that. Next is from the patron pool here is Chris Copleen. As a follow-up question, and this is a follow-up question to Dave's first question, did you do this retreat as an homage to your mentor and role model, Aaron Rodgers? My drug abuse days are way behind me. Aaron Rodgers is no role model. For those who don't know, he was the former local meth kingpin of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Legend has it that if you passed out in the parking lot of Lambeau Field, he would steal the carburetor from your car after the game. Because even though the Packers may have lost a game, Aaron Rodgers always wins. And Chris's second question is there anything about running a podcast that makes you want to drop the hobby as a whole? And what is the most rewarding part? I feel like I've been asked this question before, either on the last mailbag or maybe the one before. But the one thing that I always come back to as far as like doing the podcast is that it's really, really hard to do it by yourself. And I wouldn't say would ever make me want to shut down the podcast or stop doing it or anything. But there are some days where I'm like, man, like, fuck this shit. Like, I work way too hard on this show for it to be just a hobby. But knowing that it is a hobby, and that I can just stop whenever I want, and in fact, I do just stop every year for at least a couple of months, and knowing that I can just pick it up whenever I basically feel like it, kind of brings me back down to earth, right? I don't have the luxury to obsess over some of the factors of podcasting that others do, because I can only do so much. The most rewarding part is just finding and talking to more people in the retro gaming community. You know, there's always new stuff to learn and interesting takes on games that I either haven't heard of or can come to an agreement on. Also, research. Like, I love doing the research for the games that I play, and even though I can't spend an entire episode talking about the development history of each game, I hope everyone at least enjoys that part a little bit and likes what I bring to the table every episode. If I can bring anything at all. You know, a lot of these games are lost to history, which that's an issue. I mean, that's a problem, and maybe there's a future episode in that. moving on to Hank Parker, Pro Bass Fisher. What is your best sandwich hack?
My best sandwich hack. You know what? I'm gonna be honest with you. Not really a sandwich guy. 9 times out of 10, I'm probably going to take a wrap. I'm always going to take a wrap over a sandwich because I try not to mess with carbs that much. You can pretty much put all the same ingredients into a wrap, right? When it comes down to it, like, I don't care that much how the food enters into my body. Like, I just want it in me, you know? So whether the contents of the sandwich are just on a plate without the bread, fine. I would rather have it in a wrap, you know? Make it a soup. Take the sandwich and throw it in a blender. A lot easier to drink. I'll say this, I am a burger guy. I fucking love burgers. I don't get burgers often, but I will absolutely mess one up if the mood hits. Now, you could argue whether or not a burger is a sandwich or not, and that's something I guess I won't get into because then we're getting into the whole, like, is a hot dog a sandwich or is a hot dog a taco argument or whatever the fuck that is. When I think about it, I think that every type of burger should have an egg on it. And the meat should be bison. Bison over sirloin. Probably not the answer you're looking for. But it's the answer you got. You're going to have to figure out your lunch by yourself, buddy. And Hank Parker, Pro Bass Fisher, also asks, what is your weekly podcast rotation like? I'm going to have to bust out the phone for this one. Here's the thing. I'm about to put myself on blast here. The truth is, I don't get to listen to a lot of podcasts anymore. My podcast consumption has drastically dropped over the past 7 months or so. Even more critically, since like May or June. I used to listen to a few at work, and I don't really get to do that anymore. And I would do a lot of listening at home, which definitely does not happen at all these days. They're just looking at Podcast Addict. So like my favorite podcast of all time, still probably my number one, Retronauts. I don't think I've even listened to them in probably a few weeks, maybe a month or two. And that's usually because they like the length of their episodes doesn't really hit the sweet spot. Like I can't afford to take that time out to listen. Like more often these days, it feels like I kind of go for the episodes that are between like 30 and like 70-ish minutes long. But just looking at some of the stuff I've listened to over this past week, I am recording this on a Thursday, so week is nearly over. There's this little podcast. You might have heard of them. Hilarious guys. I think one of them likes this like weird fishing game. It's the Super Garbage Day. Then of course you got Retro Hangover, Unlockables, whenever they decide to drop an episode. List Off and Deleted Saves. Those are podcasts that are both around like 20 to 30 minutes, which is fucking awesome. Perfect. And that's kind of it for like gaming related podcasts. Like I don't consume a lot of gaming podcasts anymore. And coincidentally, most of those are indie podcasts. All of those podcasts are indies. If I have time on Fridays, I'll listen to a bigger gaming podcast. What's Good Games, to kind of just catch up on what's going on in the real world of video games, like, you know, the games that matter today. And it's also cool because you get a woman's perspective on the industry as well. But then there are some other podcasts that aren't related to gaming at all. I listen to Craig Reynolds' The Downbeat Podcast, which is usually focused on Craig interviewing musical guests of the metal variety. Craig is also the drummer in Stray from the Path, which is basically just a better Rage Against the Machine. Stuff You Should Know has been in my weekly rotation for the past 8 years now. And I don't think I ever see that podcast leaving. I, that I think that might have been the first podcast I ever discovered. Sports wise, John Boy's Talking Baseball, Flagrant. Flagrant is not a sports podcast anymore. Ever since COVID shut down sports for a season, they just didn't know what to talk about, so they just started talking about whatever, and then solidly transitioned into that just being their format. And Flagrant is hosted by Andrew Schultz, and I honestly can't think of a more hilarious podcast out there. It's great. It's great. If you're easily offended, maybe avoid it. Like, for instance, one of Andrew's friends on the podcast admitted to jerking off to trans porn. There was like this specific porn star that he was jerking off to. And on the next episode, they brought her on the show, which was hilarious. Just the reaction was, it was fucking perfect. And you know what? Very informative. I learned a lot. I learned a lot. And then, what else we got here? X-Man with Doc Coyle. That's another podcast I check out whenever he uploads something. And, Brilliant Idiots. Brilliant Idiots is another show with Andrew Schultz, co-hosted by him, that I don't listen to. I guess I don't listen to it every week. I go back and forth because I cannot stand Charlemagne the God. He is the other host of that podcast. I basically listen to Brilliant Idiots for Andrew, and I hate listen for Charlemagne. I cannot fucking stand that guy. And I think that's kind of it. I know I just rattled off a couple. It seems like a lot, but out of all of those, I might listen to only like 3 or 4 of those a week, if that, and not any one of them like exclusively or anything. The Podcast Addict app says that I'm like subscribed to 34 different podcasts, and I used to listen to all of them, every single one, every week, and that is not realistic anymore. It's just not. And like a majority of them were gaming podcasts, and I can't just listen about video games. I just fucking can't. I play them and I do my own podcast. I don't want to think about them that much. So perhaps podcasting has ruined podcasts for me. Moving on to the next patron here, and I should probably go through these a little bit faster. Eric Guess asks, your famous catchphrase is, it's okay to like a video game. Are there any instances in which this does not apply? All right, so I'm gonna answer your question with a question. Like, do you want a real answer or do you want a joke answer? So when, like, I don't even know when I started saying that. It started on Twitter. Like, I love to be passive aggressive on social media. Even if what I say isn't genuine. Most of the time, I would say about 70% of the time when I'm posting something on Twitter or Instagram, it's not 100% genuine. But I think that might have been in response to, it had to have been in response to somebody's post on Twitter that I eventually stuck to, and I added it as my sign off. But when you think about it, like, it's true. It is okay to like a video game. I've covered some horrible fucking games on this show, but somewhere out there, someone's favorite game is Tasmania for the Sega Genesis. I don't know who it is, but there's someone. There's always somebody. It's somebody's favorite game. I get it. This also accompanies what I've said on the show 100 times, that I don't care that much about what people like and what they don't like. It's fine if you disagree with me. I just said that one of the best parts about doing this thing is hearing other people's perspectives. Some people take it a little too far. And like, I don't lose sleep about any of that stuff. Like, I get it. Earthworm Jim. Hey, It's fine. Sure, why not? People, I don't know what I'm getting at. I feel like just people live in gaming. You know, they make it their personality. Sometimes all they listen to is gaming podcasts. Sure. Yeah. Sometimes that shows. And like, all I can do, I guess, is just ignore those people and just kind of let them know, hey, it's okay to like a video game. You know, sometimes I got to hear it, you know, even if my tongue is firmly planted in my cheek. You like Final Fantasy 16? Great. Cool. Someone has to. So that's my fake answer. My real answer is any Sonic game. I feel like it's about time Yuji Naka got put behind bars for his crimes against humanity all these years. He ruined people's lives for 30 years. He was right under our nose the entire time. Chris, from A Novel Console, he didn't really leave me a question technically. He just said, please live react to this video in your episode. He posted the video in my Discord, which you can get Discord access if you join the Patreon at patreon.com/mainquestpod. Oh no, I fucked it up. /themainquest. I was bound to fuck it up eventually. All right, let's check out this video that Chris posted. All right, let's see what this is about. Just looking at this. Should I open this? Discord's video player is kind of shitty. Let's open this up in YouTube. So the thumbnail in Discord is this green guy. Kind of looks like a pickle. In fact, he looks like the Maverick Hunter. Is it Maverick Hunter? Mega Man's the Maverick Hunter, right? From Mega Man X3. He looks like fucking Wire Sponge. This is a cartoon, by the way. Whatever Chris posted here is a cartoon from the looks of it. I mean, it says Cartoon Network in the bottom right-hand corner of this video. The video is called OKKO. OKKO. Succulentus? Succulentus. Alright. Let's check this out.
Silver Spark! What is the matter with you?
Candy! So, I'm gonna post a link to this in the show notes, so you can check this out along with me. But so far, it looks like a lowrider pulls up, a Wire Sponge comes out of the car, and I don't know, he's got like a cane.
Silver Spark, come on out and face me, and hurry up, my life could end at any second.
Succulentus, is that you?
That's right, and I'm taking you down once and for all, Silver Spark.
What is this, like, in the name of the- he's got like JNCOs on? He looks like somebody you would see at, like, Wire Sponge is dressed like somebody you would see at the state fair, like in the early, like, 2000s. He's got, like, a goatee and shit. And he's, I don't know, he's about to fight Cactus somebody. Crew. Oh, he's a cactus.
Are you ready?
Ah! Is this Jonathan Davis? Wait, hold on. I know that Are You Ready Anywhere. Hold on.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
You know what? This has to be Jonathan Davis because on the left-hand corner of this video, it says Seed on it. But like the typography looks like the same kind of type that Korn uses for their logo. And the E's are backwards. Like the R in Korn. This can't be. Is this really John Davis, though? It sounds just like him. And of course, attached to his JNCOs is a chain wallet. Alright. We still got 2.5 minutes to go.
I wanna see you try to take a
swing at me.
Oh, this is definitely Jonathan Davis. That was like, it was too perfect.
Now you've woken up the demon in me.
Why'd you come to the plaza to fight me?
You wanted to.
Why'd you go and drag out the past?
You wanted to.
That's not
okay,
true.
We're doing like a System of a Down thing here.
Then why'd I get a call saying you wanted to throw down?
System of a Down, definitely not a Korn song if we're throwing Korn references all over the place, but same era. he's just like, all right, so whatever. Jonathan Wire Sponge Cactus is fighting this cartoon character. I don't have any reference for this. I have no idea what this is. And he throws down his pimp cane it's a staff. It was a pimp cane, and then he turned it into a staff. He threw it down, and now he's doing his Jonathan Davis his Jonathan Davis scatting. He's saying cactus bloom? Yeah, there's like a flower growing out of it. Yeah, now these giant cactuses are popping up out of the ground and everything.
You feeling all right?
And just the Jinkos and the chain wallet.
Those are good times. You take care of yourself now.
Yes, yes, you too. And I find my thoughtless goof of a grandson.
Okay. I don't have any context for what the fuck just happened on screen here. I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate it. That's one of those things where it's like, obviously, like, I have to IMDb this. I just have to see if that was actually John Davis. It sounded suspiciously close. Unless it's somebody who's just, like, really good at impersonating his voice. Okay, there's a whole wiki on this, apparently. Here we go, succulentus. Age, elderly. Species, cactus. Gender, male. Succulentus is based on and voiced by Jonathan Davis, the leading vocalist of the nu metal band, Korn. There we go. The character's background, music, and dialogue are references to the nu metal rock songs from the 90s and 2000s. So there we go. That's really cool. And that's the thing about watching, you know, having kids and watching children's shows and stuff. Like, this is clearly a show that's probably not for people my age, but then it has stuff like this in it where it's just like, all right, I see what you're doing here. Yeah, this is fucking cool. I had no idea what this is, and now I kind of want to watch more of this because it was genuinely hilarious. Watch, I thought the only thing missing was him pulling like a bottle of fucking Faygo out of those pants. Then again, I'm gonna link to that video in the show notes. So thanks, Chris. On to the next question here from David Palafox. Do you have any new retro devices like the Super NT, Retroid Pocket, Analog Pocket? And have you ever had any knockoff consoles? I am actually really interested in the Retroid Pocket line of consoles. I don't have any of them. I did almost pull the trigger on the Pocket 3. As far as the Analog Pocket goes, that thing looks really gorgeous. Like, that thing looks sharp, sharp and clean. The Polymega seems like it would be really cool to have. The thing with most of these FPGA consoles is that they are at their best if you already own a massive physical library, which is something I don't have. The amount of physical games I own is actually very small, and most of the stuff that I do own is in storage. I'm a digital guy. If I can store it on something and call it up whenever I want to, I'm gonna do it. And after all, buying more storage to store games on is much cheaper than buying some of the games that
are out there. Kayla has a 3DS, and it took a little bit of convincing, but I did install new firmware and put Homebrew on that thing. So I do have a good, very good portable device now, which leads into the second part of the question, I suppose, because she does have this like 200 games in one cart for the 3DS, which is kind of redundant at this point, considering I hacked it. But it does have some bangers on it. I was actually really surprised at some of the games that were on there. But for every like Planet Robo, Mario Kart, or like Pokemon game on that thing, there's a ton of shovelware and like low to mid tier Nintendo first party games like Paper Mario Sticker Star or Yoshi's New Island or that shitty fucking Metroid game. Which one was that? Federation Force? But I guess if like I had to give that a positive spin, you could say that like at least we have a very robust 3DS library. So that's really kind of like the only knockoff thing that I own, which is that 200 games in one cartridge. Who knows where the fuck she got that. However, for Christmas one year, I had an ex had bought me a console, and I have no idea what it was called. I have no idea where she got it from. It sort of resembled the top-loading NES, except there was no place to insert a cartridge. It came with two controllers that it's like as if you told a six-year-old what a SNES controller looked like, and then you asked them to draw it. That's exactly what the controller looked like. Whatever you conjure up in your mind what a six-year-old would draw for a video game console controller. Like, all of the buttons on the front of the controller were red, aside from the D-pad. The D-pad was black, and the L and R shoulder buttons were gray. And they weren't wireless either. They were wired, which is fine. That's cool. But it is, like, what, this was back in, like, 2017 or something. Like, it's a little suspect. Like, it's kind of a red flag there with these sorts of things. They normally come with something wireless for the most part, right? And I remember sitting on the floor of my living room, because the only other thing that the console really came with was this 3 or 4 page pamphlet of all the games that came loaded on it, which, if I remember right, was like, I think it was well over 1,000. Not a single fucking game on that list looked familiar. I like scrolled down and like just was like looking for the hits that they would have, like the classics, Super Mario Brothers, Mega Man, something like Castlevania. Not there, not on the list. And I was like, well, let me scroll through, like maybe there's like some arcade games I can find on here. No Centipede, no Pac-Man, not even fucking Asteroids. Like Atari games, Pitfall, no. Joust, no. Like, it's like my ex pulled this fucking console through a parallel universe where all these games were some of the most innovative and best games you would ever want on one machine. But in our universe, I was looking at this list and it was just gobbledygook. Like, I didn't know what any of this was. I know it's possible, right? I know there are more games out there than we will ever know of. I know it's possible to cobble together 1,000 of them, but how do they not accidentally have Super Mario Brothers 2 Japan on there somehow, on accident? Like, how do you not accidentally trip up and put a real video game on this thing? But even still, I was like, well, at least I'll get to play a ton of games that I'm not familiar with, right? Like, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't, like, a little bit excited. Like, this suspicious, incredibly suspicious list of games aroused a curiosity in me. Inside the box were also two cords that fit into the back of the console. Fit just fine. But I went to plug them into my TV and the power strip, they didn't fit. And then when I took a closer look, the male ends of the cords looked like nothing I had ever seen before. It looked like something that you could only plug in if you lived in Brazil or like Saudi Arabia. Like these cords were not American. And when I looked at the female ends that went into the back of the console, they were just as fucking strange looking. And so because of that, that was like the final nail in the coffin for that thing. I couldn't play it. There's no way to play it. I literally couldn't. Fortunately, my ex was able to get her money back and I got something else. But when I think about it, like, I hate not knowing what the hell was on that thing. For all I know, that thing was haunted, right? It could have had the ashes of some dead Saudi prince or something. I don't know. It could have been the start of my own creepypasta, right? I honestly still wish I had it. I regret asking her to take it back because now I know so many people that are knowledgeable in hardware and would probably know what I would need to buy to actually get that thing to work. So it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm better off. Because I'm sure if I did get that thing to work, I'm probably going to play all of them. And then I would probably decide to podcast all of them. And we all know I've got a lot to talk about as it is. So that about wraps up the question from the patrons. So again, hey, thank you guys all for supporting the show. And thanks for writing in. And we are running out of time here. So we're going to go to the other places, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, some of the other places I posted on, and get to those questions. So the first question here comes from Listoff. They ask a couple questions here. First question, what's your sign? I am a Virgo. Whatever that means to you. Moving on. If you had to spend an eternity watching only one TV show, which show would you pick? Honestly, just kill me. Like, I just let me die. You know, since Kayla and I got together and started dating, I have watched more TV than I probably have in my entire life. I've never really been into TV ever. I just don't care about TV shows that much. And of all the shows that we've watched the past year and some odd months, I would safely say I would not watch any of them for an eternity. The Boys has been the best show, in my opinion, that we've watched, and even I wouldn't watch that for an eternity. So, just kill me. I would rather die. And the last question here from Listoff is, how many episodes has the main quest produced so far? And I don't know. I don't know without looking. I think I'm going on like 150. On the main feed and 21 on the Patreon, which, hey, by the way, the Patreon, you can check that out by going to patreon.com/themainquest or clicking the link in the show notes. As far as games specific to the show, you know, the games I'm supposed to be replaying and evaluating, I think I'm in like the 80s. I think, what, Sonic and Knuckles is going to be episode 88, technically, right? Like, the first year and a half, I was kind of just all over the place as far as episodes go, which are all now on the Patreon, which, hey, I'm not going to do it. I won't do it again. All of that stuff is over there, right? All of the weird stuff that I want to cover, all the topics, off topic stuff, I should say. It's all on the Patreon now. So this main feed is now just going to be the best retro gaming show that it can be. And some say, hey, that it's already the number one retro gaming podcast. I wouldn't say that. I would never say that. Some others would, but I wouldn't. And the next question comes from, I think it's two. It's a question and a comment from Pang, asking and saying, are you stopping the podcast at PS2? The last game reviewed should be Kingdom Hearts, sly smiley face. I am not stopping the show at the PlayStation 2. I have a hard cutoff at the end of my experiences with the Xbox 360, which would take me all the way to like the late end of 2011. Because after 2011, I kind of just stopped playing video games for a few years. Truth be told, if I had started this podcast when I first thought of the idea, I would probably be done. Like, this wouldn't exist anymore. And if I crunch the numbers real quick, like, if this was a weekly show and I never took any breaks, I think I would be up to 150 games in. 156 games, specifically. And that would put me at maybe just a bit past the halfway mark. I don't have the list up in front of me or anything. Because, like, right around the PS2 era, my game playing, like, drastically declined at the end of high school. Like, you got a ton of friends, you're partying, touching grass, girlfriends, all that stuff. All the stuff kids do when they leave home and fuck off instead of immediately, you know, getting an education. As far as the other comment, you know, there's no plans to cover Kingdom Hearts. And since I am chronologically going through games by consoles, I would not be doing a Kingdom Hearts game last at the end of the show or anything like that. If I was going to do Kingdom Hearts, which I'm not, it would be grouped together with the PS2 games that I played. So that was not a game that I played. So it's not happening. Around that time is when I really just fell out of love with Squaresoft as a whole. So, but hey, if you head on over to patreon.com/themainquest and sign up at the $10 tier, you could make me play and do an episode on Kingdom Hearts. This entire episode is going to feel like a fucking advertiser for the Patreon. But hey, you know what? Get it on in there. The next question comes from Steve Ladd. And he asks, of all the systems you have, what gets the most play? And what is your go-to game for that system? I feel like they all get the same amount of attention. The easy answer right now is the Genesis, right? That's the console library that I'm currently covering for the podcast. And right now, I don't think I have an answer to what my go-to game for the Genesis is, because I probably haven't replayed it yet. Like, right now, I guess Sonic 3? But, like, if we take the Genesis out of the equation, right? Let's act like that doesn't count right now. Because, that, like, realistically, I don't think that's even a console that I would pay much attention to if I wasn't covering it. And I think I said that as much when I kind of started my journey on this library of games. But when I think about it, it might be the Switch. Because that thing is loaded up with indie games. It has a ton of retro collections on it. It has the convenience of just picking up and playing immediately, that like the mini consoles and stuff that I have don't quite match up to. Also, the kids love playing Super Smash Brothers, and they love playing it specifically on my Switch because I have all the characters. So to my surprise, the console that gets the most play is the Switch. Well, the time this episode comes out, I will currently be playing something for a future episode. Now, what is my go-to game for the Switch? Again, the easy answer here is Super Smash Brothers, because the kids play it a lot. I play them all the time. I whoop their little butts without any remorse. Like, I don't even pretend I don't even pretend. I just wipe the floor with them. But like my favorite game on the Switch, specific like Switch exclusive, would be Mario Odyssey, which I haven't played in like a very long time. But yeah, it would have to be Mario Odyssey. That would be my go-to game. So the next question comes from Chase from the PlayCube Gamecast, and he asks, who would win in a fight, a cocaine-fueled black bear or 25 furries in fursuits armed with tools? Now, there's a lot of questions I gotta ask first, and I won't have answers to them, right? First of all, is this how that movie ends? Cocaine Bear? Is that the name of it? I think it's literally just called Cocaine Bear. Is that how it ends? Goes to like a convention center and like gets his ass whooped by a bunch of furries. The other question is, what do you mean by tools? Like, are we talking like just in generic terms, like weapons and stuff? Because weapons can be tools in some ways. Or are we talking like tools? Like they go to like a shed and grab a bunch of tools? That's my question. How am I going to interpret this? Well, here's the thing. I cannot speak for furries or the furry community. So I reached out. I asked the resident furry and also patron of the show, Mast Keaton, a little specifics here. And coincidentally, as I'm recording, he replied to all of my correspondence. And this is what they had to say. So you need to know how furries would defend themselves if attacked at a con for mysterious reasons that you won't tell me. Well, our primary attributes are arts and costumes. Yeah, that makes sense. But most of our costumes are foam and fur, so they wouldn't be very good as an offensive weapon. True. However, we have a lot of art supplies, pens and pencils, and X-Acto knives. Also, you could stuff heavy stuff into a tail and swing that bad boy around. A crazy large number of us are in IT. That doesn't seem to help. I feel like the furries would get just fucking demolished. The quick answer here is that cocaine-fueled bear is fucking killing everybody. There's no way. Thank you for your help, Mask Keaton. I know I said ninjas and not a cocaine-fueled bear, but I didn't want you to answer the question directly for me. And even if you had, I also think you would agree that nobody would be making it out alive. The next question comes from Jules, and they ask, it's not really a question, there's no question mark, top five favorite concerts you've been to. So this is easily the toughest question to answer. So I used to photograph concerts for a living, and by living I mean literally scraping by and eating bread and ketchup for breakfast, dinner, and lunch, because the venues, managers, and press don't really pay for anything. But I did live that way. I did live that way for about 5 years. And yeah, most of the time I was miserable. But for like the 3 or 4 hours that I was in it, like that I would be like photographing and working at the venues, was fucking sick. It was great. You know, besides the pay, like the worst part for me personally was the traveling, which I never drove further than the Midwest. I think the furthest I drove out to was like in Ohio. I don't know if I should include concerts that I was working for or ones that I went to on like my own accord. But then I feel like my choices are completely neutered if I don't include those. I'll tell you the worst one I've been to. I had a contract to photograph Godsmack. They were the only band playing that night. and they were planning like a 3-hour set. Now, the rule of thumb for concert photographers is you only shoot for the first 3 songs, and then you have to fuck off and find other shots. Sometimes it's for less songs. There was one instance where I was photographing, I'm pretty sure it was Wiz Khalifa, and I could only be in the press pit for 2 songs, and then I had to go. But usually it's 3 songs. So I got to the Godsmack show, got to the press pit, showed them my credentials, and I was told to leave. They weren't allowing photographs to be taken. So I immediately tried to get a hold of my contacts. They weren't available. I showed the guy at the press area my emails between the managers, and I was still just getting turned away. And so I didn't see the concert. I mean, I could have stayed, but I was like pissed off because I'm not getting paid now. So that was probably one of the shittiest experiences. Like, I traveled, I don't even remember what it was. I think it was that Chicago? Technically, yeah, not that far from Milwaukee, but I don't even fucking like Godsmack. Like, I didn't like them then. I sure as shit don't like them now. Like, them and their management can just go fuck themselves. Like, I was just trying to pay rent, right? Fucking Dollar Store Metallica. Anyway, I'm supposed to be talking about my top 5 favorite concerts. I guess some recency bias here, I guess. I think at number 5, I could put The Devil Wears Prada. And I've seen them like a dozen times. They're from Wisconsin, so they play here a lot. I've never actually been into them that much. I like a few of their songs here and there. But last year they were doing this headlining show, Stray from the Path, as I mentioned before, the Craig Reynolds podcast. They were direct support, and Dying Wish opened the show, and all 3 bands fucking killed it. They fucking killed it, and I learned that night that I know more Devil Wears Prada songs than I thought I did. But yeah, I left that show probably concussed, like seriously, left with some badly bruised ribs, for sure. I'd do it all over again. I'm a fool for that shit. And I guess I'll kind of cheat for my number 4 and just say any Coheed and Cambria show that I've ever been to could take my number 4 spot. I've seen them like 8 times, and 6 of those were when I was working for them. Like, Coheed and Cambria and Clutch are the 2 bands that have contracted me the most, and I love them for that. Whenever I needed some work and they were near me, they'd always be like, yeah, you can take the show. Great. Shout out to Blaze James and John Freeman, the managers for both of those bands specifically. One of the Coheed shows that stood out the most was when they were touring with the band called 3, just 3, the number 3, Russian Circles and Between the Buried and Me, which is like a perfect lineup there. Don't think 3 is around anymore, but if you're like into proggy emo stuff, check out their album, The Ghost You Gave to Me. Russian Circles, I would pretty much recommend anything from them. They're like this instrumental band out of Chicago. And speaking of 3s and bands that aren't around anymore, my number 3 concert would probably be Protest the Hero, which Protest the Hero, they're still around. Like, they're here, yes. I've actually seen them a few times now. But the show that I'm specifically talking about was back in 2010, and they were being backed up by a band called The Safety Fire and then Periphery. Now, The Safety Fire is the band that's not around, and they were so fucking good. They only, in their time that they were around, they only came out with 2 albums, and both of those are like a huge recommend for me if like you're into that genre, if you're into like technical metal. And after they broke up, most of those guys went on and formed another band called Good Tiger, which I'm not sure they're around either, but the music is slightly different, not as heavy, not as technical, but kind of like this weird I guess, avant-garde alternative sound or something. They're really cool. They're a really cool band as well. But I mean, yeah, man. Great fucking show. Like, the Safety Fire's first album at that point wasn't even out yet. They just had a couple songs out. And Periphery wasn't the massive band that they are now. I don't know if their second album was out yet either. They were just kind of starting out for the most part. And Protest the Hero was at the top of their fucking game. I mean, they're almost never not. But it overall, I mean, that was a great fucking night. I thoroughly enjoyed that lineup. I'm just like sitting here thinking, like, there's probably so many shows that I'm missing or that I can't think of. And I'm really trying to dig back, like, into the late 90s, early aughts. Like, I was going to tons of concerts back then. Like, never mind working concerts for a living, right? I think another one would be, like, the Lamb of God Machine Head double headline tour that they did. I feel like that could be a number two. I don't remember when that was. Maybe 2004 or 2005? You know what? It might have been later than that because The Blackening was out. So it had to have been either like, when did that come out? 2006? 2006 or 2007? Arguably one of the best metal albums of all time, by the way. The Blackening. I'm sure it's debatable, but it's up there. And I have a friend that loves to over-exaggerate when it comes to experiences and like crowds at metal shows. I think a lot of people in the metal community like to do that, to be honest. They're like gamers. You know, like gamers, metalheads can be incredibly cringy. It's probably why I can relate to both of those things, right? But like a lot of them are like my friends, like, bro, it was so brutal, man. Like, it was the biggest pit in the universe, bro. Like, hell opened up and a goat pissed in my mouth, man. And like the Lamb of God Machine Head show was like that exaggeration incarnate. Like, it was a massive venue. It was sold out. Lamb of God opened the show, which is weird in hindsight. When you think about Lamb of God now being one of the biggest bands out there. If metal bands like Slipknot are like the upper echelon of modern metal, Lamb of God has to be like hovering somewhere right below them. Like just right there. Like Lamb of God still sells out every arena they play easily. This was early Lamb. This was still kind of early Lamb, like probably at their peak. And Machine Head at their peak. Machine Head had just made their big comeback on the album prior to The Blackening. And like I said, I mean, that The Blackening, one of the biggest metal albums of all time. Certainly a huge album at the time. That entire new wave of American heavy metal scene had been stagnant for like 2 or 3 years up to that point. You know, it exploded in 2000, and once the dust settled around like 2004 or 2005 and like the bigger names in that scene were established, everyone was just kind of coasting. And in my opinion, The Blackening is like the perfect distillation of that entire scene. In that scene specifically, the new wave of American heavy metal, nothing after that album matched it, and everyone was just chasing it, trying to emulate it, and everybody failed. Not even Machine Head themselves could top it. They tried. They definitely tried on their next album, which had a couple bangers on it, but it was not The Blackening. And now Machine Head are just kind of a shell of what they used to be. I think a lot of the band members that were in the band at the time have left. And I think the guys that are in it now were probably at the Capitol in 2021. Yeah, it was the end, like the blackening basically marked the end of an era. And around that time, that's kind of when the new blood was coming in, right? So when you're getting all the MySpace bands, you're starting to get Whitechapel, Job for a Cowboy, Suicide Silence, Bring Me the Horizon. You're starting to get all of that, like, I guess, much more heavier, much more death metal influenced type of deathcore stuff that totally shifted the scene away from the new wave of American heavy metal. Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe I thought I was going to be hesitant on talking about this, but now that I've sorted out my thoughts on that whole thing, I think the Lamb of God Machine Head show was a fucking big one. Anyway, this has been my TED Talk on the metal scene. was it Jules? I think that's how you say this name, Jules, J-U-L-S. You really let the genie out of the bottle on this one. I still have to pick one more concert, and I've just been rambling here. I think my number one is Steven Wilson. Probably one of my favorite artists. He was in one of my favorite bands, Porcupine Tree, and they split up before I could ever see them live. And I was contracted to photograph him in Chicago. And that was my first time seeing him. And it was emotional. It was like an actual dream come true to not only see him perform after being such a huge fan for like 15 years at that point, but to also have the chance to work for him. Like, that's, it was crazy. It was nuts. And it was at this really cool venue called Park West in Chicago. One of the better venues that I've ever been to. But it wasn't that show specifically that I would put at my number one, but was the one show that he came to Milwaukee for, which is a rarity because he almost never comes anywhere near here. And he not only performed his solo stuff, as, you know, I expected, but he performed Porcupine Tree stuff for the first time in like almost 10 years. And man, like, I like wanted to cry, dude. Like, it was so fucking good. And my friend Aaron was on the Earthworm Jim episode last year. He was with me. You know, he loves Steven Wilson too. Probably not as much as me, but you know, he loves Steven Wilson too, and he was blindsided by how much Porcupine Tree content that he played that night. So yeah, that would probably be my number one. Porcupine Tree has reunited since. I think they came out with a new album either last year or the year before, 2021. It's not that great. It just kind of sounds like his solo stuff, to be honest, which is great on its own, but like not specifically to Porcupine Tree. That was a long answer to a question I actually had no answer for. Asking me what my favorite concerts were is like asking me what my favorite games of all time are. Like, there's no easy answer for those questions. And if I had more time, like a week or so to think about it, all five of these answers would be completely different. So I'm sorry I lied. And finally, the last question for tonight comes from Mr_Tomorrow. If you had to spend one night in the Spencer Mansion, would you do it? I like this question. Now, I know the Spencer Mansion is a little different, but I used to be a ghost hunter. I was in a paranormal group. I was even on a real-life syndicated TV show when, you know, syndicated television was a thing. Technically, the Spencer Mansion's not haunted. It's filled with monsters, but I would still probably say, yeah, I would spend a night in the Spencer Mansion. I guess more of the thing is, you know, what do I get out of it? Like, I would never stay there for free, right? Like, I'm gonna do it. But, like, do I get money or something? Like, what am I getting out of it? Like, it's just a night, right? And that place does have some, like, really cozy-looking rooms. So I could just hole up in, like, an office or something with, like, a big, nice, puffy couch or something and just fucking wait until sunup when someone comes to get me, preferably Jill. Maybe Barry. Actually, fuck Barry. Fucking treasonous bastard. So yeah, that's an easy one for me. I've been in a lot of very spooky places overnight. I don't think the Spencer Mansion would specifically scare me off in any way. Besides, even digitally, I've spent a lot of time there. So I think I would be okay. I just, you know, once I make my, you know, 8-hour service there, I want something coming out. So that's going to end this episode. I'm going to wrap it up here. This has gone on a little longer than I had expected. I think I ended up rambling a little bit too much, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. I enjoyed reading your questions, reacting to your Wire Sponge videos, Jonathan Davis Wire Sponge videos. I really appreciate it. I hope this is something you guys enjoyed as well. And I hope you guys are looking forward to the next year of the podcast, basically the next year of the podcast, as I cover and hopefully finish the Sega Genesis portion, / we're going to get into some 32X stuff, we're going to get into some Sega CD stuff. I'm grouping them all in here because I never really played enough of that stuff growing up, so probably going to finish that off. And next week we're starting it off with Sonic and Knuckles. So until then, take care of yourselves, you guys. And remember, man, I haven't said this in a long time. It's okay to like a video game.
Words on the Main Quest podcast.